Shadow governments, strange rituals, new world
shadow
order,
governments, strange
buried treasures,
new
planetary
world
mind control,
very strange rituals,
military cover up,
corporate shadow governments, strange rituals, new world order, buried treasures, planetary mind control,
unidentified flying objects,
presidential
assassination,
unidentified flying objects, presidential assassination,
Out there. It's a strange world.
Visit outthereradio.net for more information.
Please note, this article written by Scott L. of Ghostly Talk in 2003 was intended for satirical and entertainment purposes only within the paranormal community.
Welcome to Shadow's Guide to Finding the Right Ghost Hunting and Paranormal Research Group for you.
Hey there, guys. And if you're not guys, that would probably make you girls. So hello, guys and girls. A lot of people ask me, Scott L., how can I get myself into an active ghost hunting group that goes on hunts, does research, and basically be as cool as you? Well, there's a lot to that. There are a lot of things you want to look at and observe before you sign your soul over to the certified nutjob or full-blown crack addict who elected himself president of the club you are pledging yourself to. The best thing to do is go on a ghost hunt with the group you are interested in and see what they are all about, so to say. Here are some things you want to look for. Number 1. As an observer, the first thing you want to note of is the group's leadership. Watch how the self-appointed president treats the other members. Here is what you want to look for in a good leader. A. The group president is in control of everything. No one else can have any delegated job of any significance. This is the president's vision, so no input is needed from anyone. B. Make sure he treats the vice president like complete garbage. Also make sure he treats anyone who helps him out in starting his, quote, business, end quote, like complete garbage. That way you know he takes no garbage, and the group is run like a pirate ship full of transvestites in a hurricane. C. The group president does not put in for gas money. He has all of his money invested in the group's website costs, t-shirts, and borrowed computer from Rent-A-Center to build the group's website anyways. Look for these things and you can be confident that you will be joining a group with flawless leadership and no skeletons to find out about in the future. Number 2. Everything you see and hear is a ghost, without a doubt. You want to belong to a group that has already decided before they put their foot in a cemetery that the afterlife is real. Number 3. Carrying on rule number 2, when you see or hear a ghost, you want to make sure that everyone you are with, including the people driving by the cemetery, know that you saw or heard one. So let them know in the most dramatic way possible. This will convince them that there is a ghost around, and a million flashes will go off at the same time, blinding and killing any forest animals within a 10-mile radius. Number 4. Remember, this is a serious investigation. Things are going to need to be organized and quiet, so bring as many people as possible. You see, if there's a group of 25 people giggling, smoking cigarettes, and talking about how scared they are at the top of their lungs, the ghost will try to be louder to get your attention and possibly manifest themselves as an apparition in front of you. Number 5. Make sure all of the members bring their cell phones with them to call their friends at the keg party they are missing to say, "You won't believe where I'm at right now." Number 6. There is only one kind of flashlight. Million candle illuminators. These are the only thing to use in a place of rest and serenity, such as a cemetery. Remember, if you can't land a helicopter with it, you can't ghost hunt with it. Number 7. Make sure when going out on an adventurous night of ghost hunting that everyone attending drives separately. This way, when the police drive by the cemetery you are investigating at 1 in the morning and see a sight resembling Joe's used car lot, They are assured that the group has assembled to guard the cemetery from evil wrongdoers who wish to come in the cemetery for a night of urinating on, licking, and humping the tombstones located there. If you watch closely for these things while pledging different ghost hunting groups, rest assured, you will find yourself in a world-class investigation unit, worthy of global attention for outstanding documentation and ethics in paranormal investigations. So with that, good luck and good hunting from your friend, and probably your boyfriend, Scott L.
You are listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts Doug and Scott L.
Oh, I'm on.
Yeah, we're on.
Okay.
Thanks for that smoke break, huh?
Thank you. Wow, I ran back in. Linda Godfrey is a journalist and authority on anomalous animals and paranormal phenomenon. And boy, can I attest to that.
Absolutely.
We'll be doing our testing to shortly after this intro. She originally broke the story of a werewolf-like monster lurking around Elkhorn, Wisconsin's Bray Road. Godfrey has continued to pursue the pursuit of the unknown and has gone on to investigate an array of unusual animals allegedly lurking in her home state. She also has written Haunted Michigan, which, of course, is where...
I've read the entire book already.
I made it through, like, about three of the chapters so far. And Haunted Michigan and... Weird Michigan and also Weird Michigan. Wisconsin... and her websites are www.weirdmichigan.com and www.beastofbrayroad.com. Ghostly Talk would like to welcome, and we're going to try and fit all of this stuff just 1 hour.
1 hour.
Welcome Linda Godfrey to the show. Welcome, Linda.
Hello, thanks for having me.
I think there's going to be just a warning to the listeners, whether you're listening live or you're listening on podcast or whatever it is, there is a little bit of a delay on our line, so you're going to hear that a little bit. Just bear with us.
Yeah.
And totally cool.
What I wanted to say, Linda, we met you at Bonnie and I, and Scott was there too.
No,
there.
He was not.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were in
Philadelphia.
You were in Philadelphia at Eastern State. But we met you at the incredible Weird Winter event that Troy Taylor threw just a couple of, what was it, three weekends ago?
A month ago or
something. And in Decatur, Illinois. We got to meet you, and you, like all the other weird authors, they call them weird authors.
It's not an insult.
It's not an insult.
We take it as a compliment.
Excellent. So, but you and all the other weird authors who were there got to give presentations, and you made the biggest impression on us because while you were giving your speech. While you're giving your presentation of all the weird things in Michigan and about just all the things you were talking about, there was evidently a lot of activity going on up in the balcony.
Absolutely.
There was paranormal events. Now, first of all, the Lincoln Theater is known to be haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lincoln Theater that's in Decatur, Illinois.
Yeah.
That's also the site of where the AGS... it's coming up in, 2 months or so?
Yeah,
The American Ghost Society Conference will be there. So if you want to go to a ghost convention in a haunted theater that we can attest to that paranormal activity was happening in, you might want to check out the AGS convention. But Linda was on stage giving her presentation, and the balcony was just going insane. Bonnie was up there. Bonnie, can you just briefly go through the things, we'll actually start talking to Linda. But we want to set the stage, Linda. We want to let people know just how much activity that you stirred up
it
there.
It pretty much all started the second she got on stage. You know, one of those big lights that they use for spotlights.
Yeah, we talked about.
Fell over and crashed to the railing. for no apparent reason whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. And Linda didn't hear that, but we heard it. I was in the front row, and we heard it in the front row.
We were sitting right in front of the stairs to go to the projection room. I know no one was up there because Tom had gone up there. We kept hearing that door open. We kept hearing noises on the stairs. We heard music playing, and there was no one around. All kinds of things. The second this woman hit the stage, everything went crazy in the balcony.
Linda, what are you up to?
Yeah, what is it? How do you attract all these things?
What was that, Linda?
I told Bonnie I have an idea about that one, because that day happened to be my father's 9-year death anniversary. And Decatur happens to be where his very beloved favorite cousin, who's more like a brother to him, lives. And we were with them that part of that weekend. And I wondered if he would do something to try and get my attention, you know, while I was in that theater.
Huh. He definitely got my attention.
Yeah, so that may have had something to do with it. I don't know.
Well, I think that he definitely got our attention, because we've nonstop pretty much talked about that for a couple of days afterwards. And then every chance we got, we were just in Arkansas and we were telling folks about it. And then, of course, on the show, we tell folks about it. That theater just was so active. It's evidently some kind of conductor, and allows things to go on like that, because while you were up there, the balcony was just going crazy, and there were only two people up there to witness it. So maybe there was a reason, that you were going to be coming on Ghostly Talk. Maybe Bonnie was experiencing that so that we could just tell you all about it. It was definitely interesting. You traveled throughout Michigan. Now, that's what I was really into, because I said before Weird Winter, I said, I have to meet Linda Godfrey. I just have to meet Linda Godfrey, and because she wrote, Weird Michigan. And I love, obviously, Michigan because I'm from the state. I like everything about the Great Lakes, surround the state. So it's a pretty much, state that's like stands on its own, because I am, we're basically surrounded except for on the southern border where we border Ohio and then on the western side, with the border of Wisconsin. But we have Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana, and then that's it. There's no like traveling through the state to get anywhere, really. But we're like sort of like, stuck up here. We're just like, not stuck up like, snobby, but stuck up like, we're stuck up in the middle of all these lakes. So we've got this folklore, this tradition of folklore, we've got these legends, and you're the one, you went through Michigan and got to hear about and write about all of them in your Weird Michigan book. So I wanted to ask you about Michigan in particular to start with.
How then we can get to the Beast of Bray Road.
And then we'll get to the Beast of Bray Road. Yeah, but first I want to ask about Michigan, because that's where we're from and that's where we do the show. So what was it like traveling through Michigan, listening to all of our various and sundry legends and lore?
It was a blast. And, I did have ghost experiences. I had a dogman experience. I loved, people ask me which is weirder, Wisconsin or Michigan, and I feel like a traitor to my home state, but I have to say Michigan, because Michigan has the UP and Detroit. Wisconsin
yes,
just doesn't have anything like either one of those. It's funny, but in fact, I actually see a lot of parallels between the two. I've been advocating, I think that Wisconsin and Michigan should merge and become Michigansen. And then we would own Lake Michigan, and we could control all the Great Lakes states' shipping. We could completely rule.
Oh, I like that.
Hey, you know what? This sounds like a plan. I think this is our first plan to take over the world.
We'll start by merging. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's already a huge bone of contention over who really owns the Paulding Light. It's technically in Michigan, but people around Eagle River and northern Wisconsin think they own it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you're aware of the Paulding Light, if you've already been there.
Oh yeah. We've been trying to get there for like the last 400 years, but it's just such a far drive for us. We just can't get up there.
I said for 1 year, it was a whole year. It was like this is 2007, so 6, 5, 4. It had to have been the entire year of 2004. I kept saying to everybody, "We're going to Paulding Light. We're going to Paulding Light. We're going." Finally, they just, you know, they taped my mouth shut. They said, "Okay, you know what? We can't make it to Paulding Light. It's actually from where we are. We're near the Detroit area. From where we are, it's like a 10-hour drive or something. So to go from one corner of Michigan, to go from one corner of the Michigan to the other corner of Michigan in the UP." It's actually quite a long drive. We just have not made it up there.
I put over 5,000 miles on my car driving around Michigan.
I believe that.
I did get to every corner. Pardon?
Yeah, we totally believe that. We totally do, because just getting anywhere around here, it's so big. And it doesn't look big on a map or anything. It's just hard to get to there from here because of those lakes, which is part of Michigan's makeup. It just takes a long time to get from one corner of the state to the other. And so we've lived like that forever. But Paulding Light has held a I myself am very interested in ghost lights. And it's really interesting, the closest ghost light to me is actually in Indiana. I've wanted to see the Paulding Light forever. And yes, it is. It's like straddled there between Wisconsin and Michigan, just like you said.
Yep. Almost on the border. It's almost like it's two different phenomena. There's one light that you see that can really kind of be identified as headlights from a nearby highway. But then there's another type of light that I've had dozens of people swear to me that they've experienced, where it's not just some faraway light that you can look in a binocular and see. It's something up close. It comes through people's cars. I wrote about some of these in Weird Mission. It comes through people's cars and turns all the electrical systems off. It chases them around. It'll change colors. They'll find this red light following them and zigzagging around through the woods. Something that's plainly not the same as the highway light. So that probably might be interesting, because I really think there are at least two different phenomena going on there.
And what's also interesting about Paulding Light is it was reported well before automobiles existed. So obviously that one was not caused by a nearby highway, because it's just the nearby highway and the automobiles didn't exist.
Right. I think that's how the original legend of it's supposed to be the swinging railroad lantern of a worker that was killed there. You know, they had to start with a railroad light because, you know, there weren't the car lights at that time. And so you still have that legend, too, that there's this ghost of this railroad worker swinging his lantern. So it's kind of like a ghost and electromagnetic phenomenon and marsh lights all together wrapped up into one.
Which is absolutely fascinating that we've got all that going on right here in my home
state.
We've never seen it.
You guys are still talking about Michigan.
Yeah.
I'm still talking about Michigan. I'm sorry.
But so the people of Michigan were very welcoming and very open, I hope.
They were wonderful. They were fabulous. I have to say, I was just completely impressed, you know. And I'd bomb into the town and say, what's weird? And they'd show me places and take me places. And the place where I saw Basement Billy, the ghost in the basement in Manistee, that lady had no idea I was coming, you know, before I showed up. And the town historian told me her building was haunted. And she took me down there. She dropped what she was doing. She took me down there. And I do tell this story in the book, but just to give you a brief recount, this young man who had lived in an 1890s German family and died in the building, I think of typhus, was supposed to haunt the basement. His two older sisters also died in there, and they haunted the upstairs. But he haunted the basement, and he'd been seen around outside, too, on a nearby lot. People would see this smiling young man, and they called him Billy because his name was William. And we went down in this basement where she had seen him, the woman who owns it. Nothing in there, dirt floors, the ductwork was covered with brown paper. there were only two single light bulbs in the whole basement that lit the place up, so there was nothing that could produce any kind of a light. We turned the lights off, and we stood there in such pitch blackness. I tried to see my hand, and I couldn't. And all of a sudden, after about 5 minutes, this white glowing thing just came up out of the darkness. It was about 6 feet in front of me and about a foot below the 7-foot ceiling. There was absolutely nothing that could have been creating it. You know, the lady was standing right next to me. She wasn't doing anything. It was about the size of a basketball. If you added sort of triangular size shaped wings to it, that's what it looked like to me. And it felt to me, it wasn't illuminating anything. It felt to me like it was sucking light out of the darkness. And it furthermore felt to me like it was aware of us, that it had some kind of a presence. I was so shocked. I turned my head. I looked to the side, because I don't normally see seagulls. I've seen a couple of things in my life, but not like this. I turned my head to the side, and I looked back, and it was still there just as much as ever. And this was not, I was seeing this with my, full on with my eyes. It wasn't a little thin vapor. And it hung there for maybe another 5 or 6 seconds, and then it slowly faded away. And then my knees, and then I realized I had been too scared to take a picture. So I had a camera hanging around my neck.
Isn't that typical?
That sounds about right. You sound like you're a seasoned ghost hunter.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. That's how we do it.
It was unbelievable.
That's exactly how we do it. We see the thing, and then we're like, oh, we should have taken a picture of that. But
I had the camera hanging there.
Right.
You know, nothing I could do. And by the time I recovered my senses and my wits, what will I have? You know, it was gone. And I'll tell you what, I wanted to get out of that basement really bad. I had a very bad feeling about that thing, whatever it was. And what was worse, the woman told it that it could go with me.
Oh,
nice.
Not expected.
Kind of like that friendly cat
that just won't
leave you alone.
Right.
Yeah.
I had a really bad feeling that it did. You know, I really felt like it did follow me, and I met back up with my friend that was traveling with me, and she had the same feeling. We were really freaked out for a while because that thing had a very bad aura about it.
Has it moved back to the basement, do you think, or does it still pester you?
As far as I know, it's still there. You know, it's kind of a permanent resident. I mean, I think it left us and went back. I think
excellent.
It has its home there.
Well, that's good to hear.
I've often said concerning ghosts like that, because we've heard this this idea about ghosts following you from where you're at. I mean, if you go to a place and you experience something, if you don't do the proper protection prayers or things like that, they can come with you. They can stick to you and come with you to your home. And I've often told people, I'm like, that's impossible in my case because I'm so boring that I don't think
I can attest to that.
They would go completely bonkers of boredom and go, you know what, I'm just going to go back to where I was. It was much more fun. So that's my protection around here. This is my extreme boredom that I have all the time. No problem at all. I think I'm covered.
Well, you know, there is a place that's pretty close to you guys. Have you been to the Fenton Hotel?
Oh, yes. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
We are the Fenton Hotel. We're there all the time. It seems like we're chandeliers there, as a matter of fact. Yes,
that place is haunted.
That place.
And they have great food.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
They have great food. It's haunted. It's a complete ghost hunter's night out.
Tell us what you're... You've been there, Lynn. I want to know what you experienced there.
Well, I had quite a night there, and I was with a different friend. I kept wearing people out on these trips that I made. I'd have to get a different friend to go. My husband did it twice and said he wasn't going again. So I had another girlfriend along, Mary. And I wanted to give her a really nice evening because I'd been just, you know, working her from sunup to sundown, the poor thing. And, of course, it was a working evening, and we started learning about this hotel. And we were, first of all, told about the former janitor that still has a room upstairs. And he's supposed to be very nice and polite. They hear him. He knocks on the wall if it gets a little too loud. We did go up and see his room and took pictures. We got a tour of the upstairs.
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't see anything in there, but, you know, it's pretty dreadful up there. Things are falling down and plasters, mm-hmm. you know, on the floor and that kind of thing. But he's the gentleman. Then there's another one that they tell us likes to pinch the waitresses in the rear end.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's Doug.
Yeah.
That was just me.
He's a little bit more risque.
That's just
Doug. Yeah. And they were just, you know, gradually telling us little bit by little bit. We hadn't heard the whole thing. And we did hear the one about the one in the bar that every once in a while a man will come and order a glass of beer and a shot of Jack Daniels, and then when they take it, there's nobody there.
Right.
So they turn around and disappear. And we heard from the waitress, or the bartender actually, how the stem glasses will go sailing off of the little racks that they're on across the bar.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, my friend Mary went into the ladies' room, and she came back, and she looked absolutely white. And she has kind of real pretty, kind of reddish, longish hair. And she said, Linda, she said, I was in there, just sitting there minding my business in the stall, and all of a sudden I felt something lift my hair all the way up, one strand of my hair all the way up, and then drop it back down.
Ooh.
And the waitress was right there by the table. And she said, oh, yeah, she said, that's the gal who hung herself in the bathroom so many years ago. And people see her in there in the stalls once in a while.
Oh, very nonchalant. It happens all the time.
So, exactly, yeah. When we had our tour upstairs, we were walking around very careful, picking our way around, and after the basement Billy thing, when it worked so well to stand in the dark, you know, I thought that would be a good way to proceed. So we were standing in the hallway upstairs, no lights on. There isn't even any electricity in much of the upstairs, and we agreed that we would just be quiet, and the hostess was with us, and one of them, I heard whisper to me, either the hostess or Mary, and I whispered back, what did you guys say? And they both looked at me like I was crazy, just said, we didn't say anything. And they hadn't. But I clearly heard a woman's voice whispering something to me, something that, from close by, you know, and it wasn't either of them. I don't know what it was, but I did hear a woman's voice whispering. Well, we got through the rest of the upstairs without much incident, and when we came down, there was a big blob of candle wax on my camera right next to the viewfinder.
Ew.
And we had not been near a candle. We had not been near a candle all evening. There wasn't one on the table. We didn't have one upstairs. You know, I was taking lots of pictures. I would think I would have seen it. I have no idea how that blob of candle wax got on my camera's viewfinder.
Well, Linda, I have to say that you're in good company here when it comes to the Fenton Hotel. We've all, everyone here hosting this show tonight has had our own separate experiences at the Fenton Hotel. And we're pretty hard to sell nowadays, too.
Yeah.
That's one of those places that we went there. All of us have been there numerous times. And even myself, who I'm like the skeptic of all skeptics when it comes to this stuff most of the time. Even I walked out of there going, something happened to me that I can't explain. This place, there's definitely something going on here. The Fenton Hotel is a place near and dear to our hearts. We love going there.
They
got great food, too, like Doug said.
Great food. The staff is
fabulous food.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They have great food. The staff is fantastic. The bartenders, the waitresses, they are
great. They're all great
people
there. They're
just incredible there. You know what? Linda, we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about your home state. We're going to move out of Michigan and move next door to fabulous Wisconsin. Oh, we're moving through an airplane?
That was an airplane. I don't have an airplane.
I have a prop.
So, yeah.
Anyway, we're gonna propel over to Wisconsin. We're going to find out about the beasts, and we're going to find out about the hauntings over there in Wisconsin right after this break.
us at www.menotheclips.net. Ask us a question, become a boardie,
and check out our awesome giveaway.
MidnightEclipse.net.tc.
We'll see you sooner than you think.
Dearest friends, do you ever wonder, who am I? Why am I here? What is the meaning of life? Why do I keep repeating the same patterns, and how can I change them? Why am I free from being able to have the life that I've always dreamed of, and what is stopping me from having this? How do I meditate? What is an aura, and how do I see one? How can I come to a sense of well-being physically and spiritually, always? How can I remain in a state of absolute love, that soulful love, felt and expressed from within the heart of the soul, or we may say unconditional love, bliss, peace, and spiritual oneness in life continuously? Dr. Patty Diamond, Lady Diamond, in co-creation with Spirit, shows you the path through the new book called Stepping into Spiritual Oneness, spiritual rememberings of the soul through life experience. Available at Diamond Lady Publishing, www.diamondladypublishing.net.
Earth, come in, please. Can you hear us? We are attempting to communicate. Come in, please.
The living are deaf.
Ghostly talk. Smothered in onions.
Ew.
I love smothered in onions stuff.
Not so much.
A little strong sometimes is all.
Very strong.
Well, we're going to move away from Michigan. We're going to move to the next state over and to the north. We're going to move over to Wisconsin, which is where, of course, Linda Godfrey wrote about the Beast of Bray Road.
Oh yeah!
And Linda, thank you for indulging me about Michigan first, of course. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
And
my pleasure.
But of course, what started it all, or what really got the attention of the Weird Authors, was your work on the Beast of Bray Road. And so this is a legend that just, it's the next state over. It's something that I've heard about, but not
experienced.
Yeah, I've never been out there to experience it. And I, so can we set up camp anywhere on Bray Road? Is there like a public spot where we can just put chairs out and sit there with our flashlights and look for the beast? Or is that even safe? Tell us about the Beast of Bray Road.
No, unfortunately. Bray Road is a couple miles long, and it's farms and new developments going out there. All of the land along it is privately owned, so anytime you get off the road, you're on somebody's private land, and they will prosecute trespassers, unfortunately, because they've had throngs, including busloads of people from Illinois taverns coming out. it's been such a phenomenon since it first began. That was back in the 1990s when people started saying that they were seeing a werewolf around Elkhorn, and I happened to be the newspaper reporter who wrote the story and just kind of got tagged with it after that. They were seeing something that sounded like exactly like what you'd expect a werewolf to look like, six feet tall, covered with brown fur. I had like a wolf or German shepherd, but walking or running on two legs. Sometimes on all fours and two legs, they'd see it do both. You've seen eating roadkill, holding it with its forepaws. Had long claws, very big fangs that would challenge people and stare at them in a way that made them very, very afraid. And the thing was, when it finally hit the papers and went out nationally, everybody started calling and writing me and saying, I saw this thing too, or my granddaddy saw this, or we have these too. And I realized that this was not just some little local phenomenon. This was something that had been going on for a long time in many other places, not only just around Wisconsin, but in Michigan, with an exactly identical creature with a different name, the Michigan Dogman.
Oh.
And I remember in the 70s or 80s, I can't remember which, but I do remember the Dogman in Michigan hitting the newspapers. I mean, there were stories in
1987.
There we go, 1987, in around Flint, I believe, Fenton, Michigan, up near Fenton. Yeah. But I think it was a little north and east of there. But it was in that area that a high school kid had seen this beast. Of course, no one believed him, and then someone else saw it, and suddenly it hit the newspapers.
Right, yeah, well, there's a Traverse City DJ named Steve Cook wrote this song based on old lumberjack tales just as kind of a joke. And when he played it, this was before the Beast of Bray Road, 4 years before, when he played it, the same thing happened to him that happened to me. People started calling in and saying, I saw, this is no joke, I saw that thing. You know, my granddad saw that thing. It's just that it never quite went national. It never had the big widespread impact that the Beast of Bray Road did. However, there are many sightings, and in my book, Hunting the American Werewolf, I have quite a lot of them. Actually, in both of my books on that topic, which I hope you don't mind if I get the titles. One is The Beast of Bray Road, and the new one that just came out this summer is Hunting the American Werewolf. And there are some really scary, scary things that have happened in both states.
Do they tend to harm people? Is that part of the Hollywood legend?
Harming people is completely Hollywood legend. One thing that I think really speaks to the credibility of these witness reports is that they are so very consistent in saying that it always acts almost exactly the same. Even though it may appear very angry or menacing, what it really tries to do is distract the people or scare them into staying away until it can dive into the underbrush or cross the road or run out of sight or just do whatever it can to get out of there. It does not like to be seen. I have people even tell me they felt that it was angry that it was seen. It's not a Bigfoot either. It has a wolf or a dog head. It has legs that are configured and bent like a dog's legs. The tracks, when they're seen, look like giant wolf or dog prints, not like Bigfoot tracks. So we know it isn't Bigfoot, but it does seem angrier than a Bigfoot. It's much more menacing and scary. People are afraid of it most of the time when they see it.
This particular animal, well, Doug, your point.
Yes. No, I do have questions.
Okay, all right, I'm backing off.
Thank you.
You're, like, bouncing in the seat right now.
Thank
God we have these new chairs, because you're, like, bling, bling, bling.
Well, the thing is, okay, here's the thing, Linda. Here's what he's alluding to, and it's so true. I'm very into cryptozoology.
Oh, okay, all right.
And so of course, Bigfoot, the werewolf, and Dogman, it's all just so interesting to me. And what's also interesting is that, like, Bigfoot is seen throughout the United States, and the Dogman, and is pretty much, you only associate Dogman, that specific name, with here in Michigan. You only associate the Mothman with West Virginia, Ohio. But werewolves, and that name is worldwide. So what I'm interested in, we've got Michigan, we've got, the werewolf / Dogman / werewolf. We've got the Beast of Bray Road and werewolf. And then Hunting the American Werewolf, how prevalent is it in the United States?
Much more widespread than people think. I have many more reports on the eastern side of the United States. I don't have any farther west than Iowa, but I do have a couple in Iowa, and one or two sort of strange ones in California. It seems to be something that is found in the eastern and southern part of the United States, from New York all the way down to Georgia. There's another person who's coming out with a book on Kentucky phenomena, which will include a chapter on the Kentucky Dogman. It goes down into South America, where they call it the Lobezon. It's the same creature, but with a different name. And I think that's one interesting thing. You will find, they don't always call it a werewolf, but you'll find it in other parts of the country under different names. Down in the Cajun swamps, they'll call it the Lukuru, or the Lugaru, different variations on the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same creature, but known by different names and attached to different legends.
Well, I know that you must have read that enchanting book written in the 1800s about Legends de la Detroit. And of course, they do mention the Lugaru in Grosse Pointe right here. Grosse Pointe is, what, 5 miles?
15 miles? No, 15 minutes.
Okay, 15 minutes from really where we're doing this. And of course, I haven't heard any modern reports of Lugaroo, but that would be a werewolf right here in the Detroit metropolitan area. But that was, of course, the reports were before it was became a metropolitan area. Mm. But so we're talking as far back as the foundation, the forming of, when the French were founding the city of Detroit, which means it was
1700.
It was a fort. It was just a few missionaries, religious missionaries and some, not colonels, military men. Ooh, thank you. So it was some military men and some religious people. They come here to this area, and boom, you've got the legend of Lugaroo. And of course, same thing down south. Of course, New Orleans and stuff. Very, very French origins.
Yeah.
And so they share that name. But it's a similar creature. So is it...
Right,
go ahead.
We had people here before that, too, and Native Americans that I've talked to, I've been able to get some interviews with some tribal elders of the Ho-Chunk and Winnebago in Wisconsin who have been here, some of the longest of our indigenous tribes. And I've heard that this creature, along with Bigfoot, goes back, both of them go way back in their legend and lore. They're very reluctant to talk about this wolf-like creature. They're reluctant about Bigfoot, but they'll talk about that before this one. I mean, they're very, very closed-mouthed about it. It goes back to some very sacred stories of theirs, and they have some real strong feelings about it. But I've been told that it's been known, in their ancestry for, not just, personal ancestry, but I mean in the stories of their ancestors.
Yeah.
For, a long, long time.
So have they or has anybody else assigned the common version of a werewolf is that it's a person gone, by the light of the moon because
I'm wondering about the dynamics of this creature.
And that's the Hollywood, werewolf in London kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
What or Teen Wolf with, what's his face, Michael J. Fox. But what's the core legend of
sorry,
that helps a lot. Yeah. What's the core legend, Linda? You must have seen or talked to a lot of people about this. And is it a local kid who just I don't know.
Put a suit on?
Yeah, put a suit on. Or no, I mean, is it a local kid who just goes crazy by the full moon? Or is it just
I go into this a lot in both books. And the people who are pure cryptozoologists object. They think I shouldn't talk about that. However, anytime anyone's trying to offer something as an explanation, I feel I have an obligation to sort of tackle it and tell what I know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that there have been people on Bray Road who put on costumes and tried to scare people. There has been a mental patient who leaped on people's cars nude. But this was all after the fact, after the first sightings had been recorded. They were sort of wannabes, people who were, I think, taking advantage of it to scare people. And I'm not sure that there aren't still people doing that. It wouldn't surprise me. Because the bigger it gets, the more it is somebody who lives out there or wants to have fun will go, although it's very stupid because somebody could shoot you. There are people who drive around with loaded guns.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it's possible it could account for a few sightings. There's no way it possibly accounts for the hundreds. I'm way, way over 100 accounts now, between Wisconsin and Michigan alone. And those are just the ones that I've been able to investigate. That doesn't include a lot of secondhand reports.
Well, yeah, and I mean, in a situation like that, I mean, it's just like that carries over into ghost hunting and all that fun stuff, too, because we've been to places where people have pulled pranks and stuff before, and I know we generally frown on pranks of that magnitude. You're going to get people out there, they're driving in a car, They're expecting to see some type of werewolf-like creature. Their anticipation's up. Their adrenaline's up. They don't know what they're going to see, and all of a sudden here comes some crazy guy who's dressed like, you know, he may have a suit on. He may be nude. I don't know. I mean, it's going to scare the crap out of you. To put it bluntly, it's going to scare the crap out of you.
Here's the other major point, is that the vast majority of sightings do not happen on Bray Road. There have been very few of those in the past 10 years, only one that I know of for sure. Most of them happen in very isolated, unusual other places in the wee hours of the morning where you would not go if you wanted to, you know, play a trick on somebody.
Yeah.
You know, to have somebody, I mean, to imagine that there's some guy in February in Wisconsin sitting out in a ditch at 2 a.m. hoping that one car will come by that he can, you know, jump up and scare.
Well, yeah.
And a lot of people...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
A lot of people also get I'm sorry. That a lot of people often get close enough that they can see musculature. They can see saliva dripping off the fangs. They can see... they make eye contact with these things. You know, and because I always ask, is there any chance it was a person in a gorilla suit or something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've all said, no way.
Ooh. That's something. How did the legend start? Why is it called the Beast of Bray Road if so few have... Is that just how what the initial thing was when you first started investigating the story for the paper?
Yes, that's because the first reported sightings that came into me happened to cluster around Bray Road. It's just that a number of witnesses who... They didn't know each other, but they had some associations that they found out about each other. And it was all around that area near Bray Road. And to me, it sounded like I didn't want to call it a werewolf at the time, you know, because I sure was not convinced that that's what it is. And I still don't. I still am always saying this is not your Hollywood werewolf. Sometimes I'll use the word for shorthand for what it looks like, but it's not, you know, Michael Landon spouting fuzz or Lon Chaney. But that's where the first reported sightings happened. And so the beast, you could describe it fairly as a beast, which could be anything from a kitten to a dragon. So to me, Beast of Bray Road just had this good ring to it. So I coined that term, and that's the one that stuck.
Well,
it stuck. It's part of Americana now.
Well, yeah, I've heard this so many times, the Beast of Bray Road.
Right.
I've heard that term over and over again in my short career in this study. Of all things paranormal, I've heard the Beast of Bray Road over and over and over again. So it is something that's a very popular story now, I think.
Yeah, you broke quite a popular story, especially for those of us who pay attention to cryptozoology.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever think that, wow, people are going to be, you know, reading books on... I mean, because did you ever think you were going to write a book, Beast of Bray Road, and then Hunting the American Werewolf? Did you ever think that when you first heard these reports, or were these reports... Because you were a journalist.
Oh, right. I was working as a newspaper reporter, and sometimes part-time as an art teacher. I have an art education degree also. And it really wasn't in my mind. I thought, well, this is interesting. I felt responsible as the keeper of the lore and the stories, because people kept coming to me, and I felt they were important, if nothing else, as folklore. And so... I kept saving them and trying to, you know, file them. And it wasn't until years had passed that I started getting enough of a group together. And especially after, you know, I had probably done 5 or 6 national TV shows, which it even got more in. Then I started thinking about 7 or 8 years later, well, if it's so long and there's still so much interest in this, then really I kind of owe it to the public to write a book and put it all down, you know, and have the whole thing together so people can understand, you know, how it came about and where this all came from and what the stories really are. And I had published another book that also came out of a news story about a poison murderer from Whitewater, Wisconsin. And so the publisher was happy. It's called The Poison Widow. Really amazing story of this woman who was nationally known at the time in the 1920s for murdering her husband and trying to murder her 4 children with strychnine.
Ah!
She had a college-age lover. It's even kind of racy, you know. But that book went so well that they were glad to do the Beast of Bray Road, and then the response to the Beast of Bray Road was so good that they really wanted a sequel. And by then, so many more people had written me that, you know, it was no problem. I easily had enough for another book, and I'm researching for a third one. I don't know if I'll get to it. Right now, I'm doing sequels to Weird Michigan and Weird Wisconsin.
Yes,
excellent.
Yes, you get our vote. That's our vote, Linda. We want sequels to Weird Michigan and Weird Wisconsin.
Elmo in the chat room wanted me to ask you if there are ghost lights associated with the road as well.
If there are ghosts, I'm sorry, ghost lights
are there,
associated with what?
Yeah, are there ghost lights associated with Bray Road or any roads nearby?
No, not that I've been able to find, and I have investigated that. One story they left out of Weird Wisconsin that will be in Strange Wisconsin is a place maybe about 15 miles south of there called Swamp Angel Road near Walworth, where they do have swamp lights. Where the locals just always call them the Swamp Angels. But it's really not close to Bray Road. However, many other things have been seen down there near Swamp Angel Road. That's actually near some other sightings locales. I've had a number of sightings found in that area, actually. So you can't always go by what by Bray Road, I think, is just sort of a fluke of the feeding ground of this thing. And it happened to get caught a number of times and ended up giving it its name, but it is not the only place where it's seen. Like I said, I can't emphasize that enough. The same with Michigan. The vast majority of sightings take place elsewhere.
Right, and it is weird how those names come about. You know, I mean, because this particular name, you know, Beast of Bray Road, yeah, that was coined, and it really rolls off the tongue, and it's emblazoned in our mind. And so you've got Bray Road, I've got to go there. But when you go there, that's not really the location. I mean, the location is pretty much anywhere in the area,
mm-hmm.
usually anywhere near nothing.
Right. Yeah.
So if you get to Bray Road, and it's all these houses and housing developments and things like that and private property, it's not the place where the beast is going to show up now. You know, you got to go elsewhere now.
Right.
Yeah, interesting.
And the thing is, I've got... Yep, there's a place not that far to the northwest called the Lima Marsh, which is a gigantic swamp area that's open to the public. Anybody can go in there. I've had two bona fide Bigfoot sightings, and it's virtually ignored. I've got the story. I call it the Lima Marsh Monster.
Oh.
It's
very interesting.
It looks like
I've got a
pack. I gotta pack my tent. You're gonna have a paranormal co-host, a paranormal show co-host, see it too, because sounds like I have to go up there.
Yeah, it's really it's an amazing wild area that's kind of bounded by farms and things. Except if you look at it, you can understand anything can be in there. But a local restaurant owner and his wife both saw this thing crossing the road in broad daylight, and it was definitely a Bigfoot. Had the pointy head, the cape-like fur coming to its shoulders, the bigger size, the walking like a man, not like a dog. It's very easy. If people see the head and the legs, it's very easy to identify which one of these things they're seeing. And we've got them both.
Well, that's
southeastern Wisconsin.
That sounds like a whole other show right there.
Yes, it does. Linda, we have to go.
We have to go, and This hour flew.
Okay, yes. Your websites. I've got www.weirdmichigan.com, of course, www.beastofbrayroad.com, and I'm sure that folks can find links to any other websites or Amazon.
You'll find them
whatever.
On our site.
We'll have links up. Wow, Linda, it has
Thank
been
you so
such
much.
A pleasure, and it was great meeting you then, and it was at the Decatur, Illinois Weird Winter. It's great talking to you today.
Stay on the line for 1 second, Linda.
As your projects progress and you and more books come out, let us know. We want to talk
please,
to you about them.
Please do that.
I'd love to.
Excellent.
I'd love to. It was real fun.
Great. Stay on the line for 1 second, Linda. This is Ghostly Talk.
Yes, and coming up, we've got David Seeloff of AskElm.com.
We're going to be talking about scripture. Going to be something different here, I think.
That's a little change up for Ghostly Talk. So.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a little different, I think, but I'm looking forward to it. And this was one of those guests that was requested by our listeners.
Excellent.
So that's why we have
What's interesting
here.
Is how it ties in with what we've talked about all evening this evening.
I know.
So it really came together. So we're going to take a quick break. Get David on the phone. Thank you, Linda.
Stay on the line, Linda.
And stay on the line, though, Linda. And we'll be right back after this.